Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing elements that deserve to be locked up in movie jail, Sonic the Hedgehog, and our From the Outside In topic this week, CGI characters. Misa, ready? Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. I technically only just got back from a big vacation, although we are in the past. But by the time this drops, it'll be in the future, and I'm still on vacation or something.
We basically had to record the episode early. That's what he's saying. Amanda cannot be here this week. Joining us is my Blacklist Exposed co-host, Troy Heinrichs.
Hello, hello.
You know, it's so much better when you do it.
Yeah, you said it right.
They can't see it, but I actually have Amanda's face and voice CGI'd into the course of the podcast this evening.
Oh, nice little, I see what you did there. You like connected it, right?
I did.
I like that.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Hey, thanks for coming back.
Hi, John, my spirit animal. How are you?
I'm doing well, my spirit animal, Troy. How are you?
Because we like the same things.
Like what?
Everything he talks about, I go, yep, I agree, John. So it's going to be a long night for you, Aaron.
Well, usually when you talk, he's like, God, will Troy ever shut up? When's that going to happen? So
yeah, but I'm like that when you do it, when you're talking, when Amanda's talking. I really just want everyone to shut up. Like a podcast of silence. Let's just do an ambient noise podcast.
We could be done in 5 minutes and just like copy and paste it, make it one big long file. We could do that. I was reading an article. And I was kind of curious where you guys stand on this. So I go to movies alone all the time. And this article was talking about how it's actually good for your mental health to go to movies alone. Do you guys ever do that? And so if you do you like going to the movies alone?
I used to dread the idea of going to the movies alone. It would be something where I liked going with a big group of friends or, you know, with a special somebody. But as I started doing the show and I got to the point where I needed to go see more movies just to be able to contribute something, I started going to the movies alone a lot, and what I did discover is that it is so freaking freeing. It is so nice. You go to a movie, you can have your own thoughts about it. You don't have to be worried about the person who you dragged there with you is enjoying it or not. You can just be like, this is me time, and it's okay.
Real quick, Troy, before you speak, haven't you only been to the theater like twice this year so far?
I've only been in the theater once this year.
Okay, so it's actually worse than I thought. All right, well, I'm glad you're making all that quality time for going to the movie for the show that you made a point to point the reference to. Okay. Dork. What about you, Troy? Do you like going to movies alone?
I do, and I went to the movies alone twice this year. So I'm up one up on John.
Look at that.
And I got to go to 1917 by myself because it's awesome because you can just take in the experience and enjoy the one single shot, quote unquote, that it was for what it just provided for cinema. And you didn't have that person going next to you going like, is that guy going to die? Is that guy going to blow up? Is that guy going to get, is there an airplane coming? It's like, oh my gosh, like shut up, like watch the movie. Don't talk the movie.
See, on that, we are spirit animals. You and I just want to be part of the spirit animal nonsense.
Like when I go to the movie with Aaron, I sit a seat over, not because it's the leave a seat in between you rule. It's just because I know if I sneeze wrong, Aaron's going to punch me in the face.
I don't like it. I can't even explain how much I love going to the movies alone because nobody asks me any questions. And I know that sounds like, wow, you guys are just like curmudgeon-y and da da da. I'm like, nah, I got into that years ago when I started going to film festivals because a lot of times you're going to movies alone. And I learned that I miss so much because A, people are usually, if you go with people, they don't mean to bother you, but they're going to interrupt you throughout the movie. Even if it's really quietly like, wow, did you see that? You know, and that's fine and that's cool. But sometimes it's more enjoyable to just sit there and soak in the movie and not have anyone talk to you. When you go to film festivals, you're always alone. Or when you're screening as a critic, you're always alone. So I believe, in my opinion, you absorb more of the movie and it makes it a little bit more engaging. You also notice the imperfections a little bit more because you're not distracted and you can't just talk to somebody if it sucks. But overall, it's just more enjoyable. Like you immerse yourself so much more when you're by yourself, in my opinion.
You also don't get made fun of by your 14-year-old daughter and her friend when you are the one that's a puddle on the floor crying in Toy Story 4 at the end.
Well, shame on. Why would you, are you the one that voted for it for the Oscar? Because I don't even understand. Like, really, it's the fourth time. You don't see all this stuff coming at you. Like, you don't. It's not predictable to you.
It's like Return of the King. It was like the end of a thing, so you have to give it the award.
No,
but it's not the end of a thing.
Three was end of the thing. Four was a new thing they tacked on because Disney's like, we need a new wing for Disney World. So we'll make one of these movies, and it'll crank out a billion. We'll be all good.
I think there's a fifth one on the way.
No, there cannot be a fifth that's one on not the way. True. As soon as they need some money, though, there will be.
We'll see.
Hanks is like, I need a new airplane hangar. So I'm going to go. I mean, wait, Tim Allen will be free, but I don't know about Tom Hanks. He might he might finally have enough money. All right, let's get into our movie and TV discussion. We recorded early, so there's no news roundup. But what we are going to do is kind of talk about movie jail. We're going to talk about movie jail. Basically, we each picked three items that we feel we don't want to see ever again. So we're going to lock them away and throw them the key away, and they're going to be placed in movie jail. So what are three things? We can go round robin. So 3, 2, 1. What are the three things you came up with that you decided, I want these to go into movie jail and I never want to see them in a movie again?
So the thing that popped in my mind most, and unfortunately most of mine have to do with comic book movies, but when the hero gets stripped of his power for whatever stupid reason, I'm to a point where I think that's lazy and I don't want to see it anymore.
So that can never happen again. So you're saying put that in movie jail. We never see that again.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a reason why to use it eventually, but you know what? Forget that reason. It's more important that we just stop doing it.
So okay. Superman 2 never had that in there. You think Superman 2 would still work?
Of course not. But
I mean, it's the whole plot of Superman 2, so they'd have to do something else.
Right, but we're talking about the fact that from this point on, we can't see that again. So you're right. In Superman 2, it's the only thing that works in Superman 2, or what makes that movie work. So I get it. It's there, but that was 80 something. I don't know. And it's now 2020 something. Let's move on with other reasons to start being on the side of our heroes.
Literally the year is on everything you do. Like every computer, it's 2020. It's okay to accept it. What about you, Troy? What goes into your movie jail first?
Anytime you see The Rock do CGI specifically, because The Scorpion King gives me nightmares to this day. So we could just, I mean, showing up a lot lately, Jumanji, you know, the Jungle Cruise thing's coming. It's like, you just kibosh it now, because I have a feeling that there's a CGI version coming soon, and I just do not want to see it. Or de-aging on him would probably be another thing that we could just put in jail.
Did good job on that with Central Intelligence.
Did they, though?
Yeah, they totally did. They made him look at that little fat kid. It totally worked.
I mean, if you think they did a great job, then that's good. I acknowledge that you feel that way.
I acknowledge that you are mocking me.
Good. I'm glad it was clear. I was hoping it was a little fuzzy. Well, my first one is characters saying, let's do this. I want that done. I never want to hear it again in my lifetime. I hate that. I hate whenever a character says that, I'm just like, oh my God, let's do this. Let's do this. It's every action movie, every heroic movie. They just say it all the time. I can't stand it.
What if they say it ironically?
Let's do this. No. No, there's no way I want it. No.
Okay.
Nope. Movie jail. Lock it up. Throw away the key. All right. Next. Second round. John.
My second one is heroes fighting each other, like a la Batman versus Superman. That fight should have never, ever, ever have happened on the big screen, because Superman could have literally just sat there and taken any little thing that Batman threw at him, with the exception of Kryptonite. And he could have been like, look, could you stop hitting me for 2 seconds and listen? I'm just trying to get these words out. You're really interrupting what I'm trying to say. I don't need any more of these things.
Okay. That means no more Civil War kind of movies as well?
Yeah, screw that.
Okay. All right. What's next for you, Troy?
I know it's critical for storytelling, but I'd love to see the hero's journey storytelling concept put in jail.
Explain.
So that way, when you craft a new movie, you can't rely on the hero's journey, where there's the introduce the hero, hero has a conflict, hero overcomes conflict, and then hero saves the day. It's like a passage, a concept that you just kind of follow the structure of every story ever written. So let's come up with a new structure. Let's just throw that in the jail. You cannot use it ever again. come up with a new way to tell a story and let's see what happens.
I love that. I'm on board.
I do too.
You get powers. You enjoy powers. You keep enjoying that you have powers. Yay!
And that's why you have The Boys. And it was fantastic.
It was diabolical. My next one is a young woman tripping over a fig leaf or whatever while running away from a killer when she hasn't fallen at any point in the last 90 minutes. I hate that. I want that to stop. It's dumb. Half the time, these people are very athletic. They're shown throughout the movie to be extremely athletic. Yet when they get a little scared, they trip over everything they come in contact. They've got brand new Adidas on and they're constantly tripping on everything. Flat pavement and they still trip. There happens to be a stick in the middle of the road. Like, there's never a reason for it, but they're always tripping when somebody's trying to kill them. I hate that.
Who threw this lawn chair right here in the middle of my path? This is bullshit.
This is so weird.
Yeah.
So lock that one away. I'll never want to see it again. All right. Last one, John. Number three.
All right. So my last one has to do with so you got the heroes and they're all fighting something and suddenly somebody flips a switch or they close a door or they shut something down and all the bad guys, the thousands of bad guys they've been fighting this whole time just suddenly just drop.
Oh, yeah. Like they got the lead vampire or whatever it is. Thanos.
Yeah. Dumb. As much as I love the Avengers, the whole idea that they killed, you know, essentially committed genocide just by closing that door because the Chitauri just died right there. Like, and then we see him again later. I don't get it, but, you know, it's dumb.
Yeah, that does kind of, it's kind of a cheat too, right? It's just like an easy way to be done. I mean, granted, it was awesome in Game of Thrones, but at the same time, many people hated that because it just felt like, well, that was a little too easy.
Right. Absolutely. Exactly the same thing.
Yep. All right. Troy, last one.
Shot for shot remakes of original properties brought back for a new generation.
Well, hang on. That's only happened like one time.
That's like four times now.
What's the other three besides Psycho?
Like Jungle Book, Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, you mean like those Lion Disney King. Ones? Okay. So those... All right. I don't know. I see what you're saying. Those live action remakes of animated films then.
That were shot for shot remakes. Like Cinderella was good because it was a little bit different. And I know Mulan is supposed to not be shot for shot, which is going to be great. But the things that are shot for shot remakes, it's like it almost feels like you're literally raping me for an extra $20.
Okay.
Or figuratively raping you for that.
No, I felt like the guy was in 3D coming out of my screen when I watched Lion King the other night because those animals are real.
Wow.
Did Bob Iger show up and try to take money from you?
Scar just reached out and said, $20. Pay up. Hyena's
only the really
eat.
Good listeners will be laughing at that joke.
All right.
He got enough of my money when I was at Disney on Friday.
Yeah. Oh, he gets all your money. All right. My last one is any character hanging up from a call without saying goodbye. Everyone says something when they hang up. Nobody in movies or TV really ever say anything when they hang up. It's just like, yeah, did you get that thing? Yeah, I got that thing. That was pretty cool. All right. Thanks for looking into that. Yeah, no problem. And then they hang up the phone. No one said, bye. See ya. Good luck on the weekend. Hope you have a fun, you know, night. Hope you have a great holiday. Anything. Just bye. That's all you got to say is bye. No one ever says bye. It drives me crazy. So from now on, you put that people not saying bye into the movie jail. Everyone has to say something when they end a freaking call.
Well, you know, in your example, though, you actually, I mean, that sounded like a closing of a conversation.
No,
though.
It did not. You say bye.
It totally did. You know, it did because that's how fast you jumped on it, too. You're like, shit, I screwed it up.
I actually think Tommy Wiseau said goodbye at the end of his.
I don't want to ever reference that movie as actual credibility
that's what
for film.
I think that one actually got it right, surprisingly.
Son of a bitch. Well, if you got any ideas for what should go in movie jail, you can always throw them in social media at BuyPopcorn or on our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider on Facebook, or you can, you know, go to the website, comment on this particular post. Let's move on to, we're going to play What's This Movie? And Troy wanted to do it his way. So this is basically What's This Movie? Troy edition.
That's right. This is What's This Movie? 80s Movie Bar Trivia edition. And so the way this works, if you ever played bar trivia, you basically get all the answers on the board and then they start to like disappear and you get less points the further along you go along.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, what we're going to do is we're just going to play best of three. So what I'm going to do is give you an actor's name, the director, a line that that actor said, and then hopefully by then you should be able to figure these out. If not, then I get the point.
Uh-huh.
But if you guess it right, then you get the point. So it's a little bit of Stump the Hoe mixed with what's this movie?
Got it. Okay. And
so, for example, practice round, I would say Harrison Ford, J.J. Abrams. I got a bad feeling about this.
Oh, Star Wars. Force Awakens.
Now Force Awakens.
You got to be specific, right?
Specific.
Okay.
No, that wasn't an 80s one, but that was just an example.
Okay. John and I are really playing against each other, and if we can't get it, then you get the point.
Exactly right.
Okay, and it's best out of three?
So if you get one, John gets one, and you don't get one, and we all tie, I have a fourth one so we can break the three-way tie. Okay,
got it. You ready, John?
You ready?
I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. Hands on the buzzers. Here we go.
Do I have to buzz or do I yell it out?
Just yell it out.
Okay.
Michael Winslow.
Police Academy.
Jerry Paris. Demu. Want to fight? Fight me.
Police Academy 2.
Police Academy 2 is correct.
Oh, son of a bitch, it's not fair. How do you remember that?
I even gave you a chance, too.
Oh.
All right, round two. Here we go.
Son of a bitch.
Molly Ringwald. John Hughes. I could disappear forever, and it wouldn't make
candles.
Any difference. 16 candles is correct. John wins.
This game sucks.
All right, just for fun, we'll finish up the other ones. Emilio Estevez. Stephen King.
Oh, Maximum Overdrive.
Maximum Overdrive. Jesus is coming, and he's pissed. Love that line.
Son of a bitch.
And then we have probably the one that will stump everybody, which will be J. Brennan Smith, Michael Nankin, and David Wetcher. And J. Brennan Smith said, if I'm lucky, I may get a view of Venus's two moons.
I don't know that
I
one.
I know the line.
But I want to watch it.
And I brought this up because Aaron couldn't guess it right when we did this in the Ho group. He's like, I know the movie and I can't figure it out.
I can't figure it out.
And he still can't figure it out.
Nope.
Yeah, I know the movie too. And I can't figure it out.
Michael J. Fox, The Great All-Nighter.
That's the name of the movie?
The Bonaventure Hotel.
Wait, just tell us what it is, man. We got to move on.
Midnight Madness.
That's the movie?
That's the name of the movie. Midnight Madness. It's the one where they race all around L.A., playing Leon's Great All-Nighter, and they finish up at the Bonaventure Hotel.
And Leon's getting larger.
That's Airplane.
Oh, yeah, wrong one. All right, well, our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets. Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcast. If you want to help support the show, you can just go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Sign up for a tier. There's all kinds of bonus content. We just did a Heartbreakers episode on Bad Movie Night, which is a great movie.
Love that movie.
You don't really believe in good, solid relationships. Okay, we are going into two spoiler-free reviews, Fantasy Island and Sonic the Hedgehog. Unfortunately, I am the only one that saw either one, so it's just me. It's all you have. I'm going to be rather quick. Fantasy Island, man, it's a horror adaptation of the popular 70s show about a magical island. And if you remember when you watched the show and you had Ricardo Montalban as Mr. O'Rourke, he made people's dreams come true. It was all about love. It was all about redemption or dealing with some kind of positive reinforcement in their personal lives. And that's kind of what the plot is here. But instead, they have a horror tint to it. It's really interesting because you have, oh man, you have Mr. Rourke. He makes these secret dreams of his lucky guests come true at this very remote tropical resort. It's on its own island. And each person that comes there, and you have a cast full of Maggie Q, you have Lucy Hale, and you have many others that show up. And all they want to do is live out their fantasies, their random fantasies. Some is to party. One of them is to party and have a great time with their brother. Another one is to make right with a bully. Another one is to take care of a long lost regret. And each one has an edge. Like as they go, they their rule is that they have to see their fantasy out to its natural conclusion. And what that means is it can get scary. It can get dicey. Now, here's where I would like to explain what I think. Michael Pena plays Mr. Rourke. I think he does a fantastic job. The cast is actually very solid. I have no qualms at all with the cast. Here's what I do have, though. Man, it is a great idea. It's a wonderful idea. Fantastic idea. Take Fantasy Island, that show many of us watched in the 70s, and we all kind of, it was very Love Boaty. It was like Love Boat on an island, and put a horror slant to it. That is a fantastic idea. I love that idea. And for a good portion of the movie, it seems like, oh, this is very cool. They're going to work with this. They're going to make something cool out of this. They're actually going to utilize this and build upon it to make something memorable. And then they don't. They don't at all. They actually go a completely different way. And the plot gets dumb. The contrivances get really ridiculous. And it becomes a very hard to take seriously final act. In fact, I would say the last 30, 35 minutes of the movie, it's hard not to laugh at everything that's going on. It just turns into this giant pool of nonsense amidst a very talented cast. It's scenic locations and everything else. I mean, it's really kind of a shame because I would love to see this concept take off, and unfortunately it does not. So Fantasy Island for me was no dream. It was a nightmare. I don't recommend it. I would tell you if $10 is the full price of admission, I would pay $4, and I wouldn't pay $4. I would wish for me to get my money back because the movie sucked. It's just not good. It's just not good. It happens. You know what I mean? And I gotta say, we really need a horror win. I mean, it has been a couple months and The Turning and this, and there's just like The Boys come, Boy 2 is coming out. That doesn't look that great. It just feels like, we need a horror movie to get people excited again. Am I wrong? And Fantasy Island had all the potential. Blumhouse is behind it. They made a ton of great horror movies. The Invisible Man is around the corner. That, I think, is going to be a winner. But man, so many misses. And this was one that shouldn't have missed. It's a great, great idea. Speaking of great ideas, here's one that is not. And that is Sonic the Hedgehog. Now, I want to tell you something, okay? When I review this movie and I give you a score, it's important to remember that the score is, you know, I'm still a film critic. In order to be taken seriously, I have to critique fairly film. And there are some definite, legitimate criticisms about Sonic the Hedgehog. But here's what it's about. It blends live action with newly designed CGI. So they recreated Sonic due to much fanfare. And a lot of fans are calling that a win. I think for the most part, it is a win. But we'll come back to that another time. Sonic here begins on his home world. And as it's explained, his ability to erupt into super speed, if you think about it, it's very much like the Flash. DC's the Flash. He just bursts into super speed, and that creates this enormous power. And it's that power that everyone is going to want, because nefarious parties always want control of whatever that power is. So he's forced to flee his home because everybody wants him, and he uses these special rings, tied into the game, which essentially are portals. So each ring is a portal to another world. So he uses these rings to come to Earth, and he kind of hides out. He has a place of anonymity. And as he grows up, Sonic is forced to live in the shadows, and he watches humans like Sheriff Tom Wachowski and his wife Maddie, that's James Marsden and Tika Sumpter, go about their days from afar. And then what happens is he goes about, again, just living his life, and he tries to do too much one night, and he realizes that he is all alone, and he gets a little road rage, I don't know what you call it, but an enormous power is unleashed from him, and it basically short circuits the entire world or that vicinity, satellites and everything else, and it sets off a notification to the government that we need some of that, whatever that is. Now, it's either a terrorist attack or, you know, it could be an EMP or something along those lines, or something even better, something that they can harness and use. Well, what they do is they send in a military contractor, I guess, Dr. Ivo Robotnik, who's played by Jim Carrey, and he's doing a greatest hits version of every character he's ever played in every movie ever before. It's actually, I mean, you get a little Ace Ventura, you get a little The Mask, you get a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And Robotnik is this genius inventor who believes himself to be the smartest man in every room and on the planet. So what he does is he wants to hunt down Sonic after he realizes that there is a Sonic and steal that power from him for his own obvious gain. He's Dr. Evil. That's what he is. And then eventually Tom, James Marsden, helps Sonic get to where his rings are so he can get the rings, so he can go back to his home world. And along the way, there's some friendship. Now, Sonic the Hedgehog is not aiming for high pretentious art. It is not trying to be something deep and meaningful. It is meant to be a kid's movie. Now, and from that respect, it works. It really does. Now, here, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to get this out of the way. Score. $10 of full price. If $10 is the full price of admission, I give it $5. Because there are legitimate criticisms. There are many times where the CGI doesn't line up with the actor's eye lines, where they're looking at the wrong tennis balls. You know, they should be looking directly at Sonic, but instead they're looking a little above him, a little below him. It's really distracting after a while, and it became a little irritating. There's a lot of cheese involved. I mean, this is like Velveeta style. There's a lot of just ridiculous, contrived plot devices and mechanics, and it's silly. Now, so as a movie, as a film critic, I give it a 5. Now, I don't think it's a great quote-unquote movie, but what I will tell you is that all the kids that were in that theater with me had a great time. They were laughing. They loved Sonic. They thought he was adorable. They were smiling. Their parents were smiling because they didn't have to take their kids into the hallway and beat them. There's all these good things that came out of this movie. So I would say, if you're a parent and you're looking for a good family matinee, Sonic the Hedgehog will work for you. It's safe. It's Ben Schwartz voices Sonic, and I think he does a very nice job. I wasn't sure when I saw the trailer. I'm like, I don't know if that voice works. And the new design works really well. I don't know how they couldn't come to this to begin with. So take the score out of it. Think about it in terms of, are you going to it because you're a longtime Sonic the Hedgehog fan? If so, I think you're going to be entertained. If you have little kids or kids up to like 13 or 14, I think they're going to have a really good time. It's really fun and enjoyable. And by the end of the movie, and then, by the way, lots of Easter eggs for Sonic the Hedgehog fans, of which I am. I used to play this game all the time. And by the end of the movie, it feels like it's really found its groove. It really knows what it's trying to do. And it does justice in the legacy of Sonic the Hedgehog proud. So take that for what it's worth. I don't think it's a bad movie at all. It is enjoyable. It is entertaining. It's just not a quote unquote great movie, but it's enjoyable. It's entertaining. I don't know. It's not for me. Like, I'm too old for this movie, I guess. I get off my lawn or whatever. But if I was a little kid, I think I would have a really good time, or a kid at heart. Obviously, my heart died a long time ago. It was for the youth. So there you go. Now we've got some new releases to talk about. One is coming out on, these are coming out on February 21st. First is The Call of the Wild, A Sled Dog Struggles for Survival in the Wilds of the Yukon. Stars Harrison Ford, Karen Gillan, and Dan Stevens, and a really badly CGI dog. The Boy 2, they made a sequel. Who the hell wanted a sequel to The Boy? Whatever.
After failing, called The Teen?
You would think, right? After Boy moves into the Heelshire mansion, their young son soon makes friends with a lifelike doll called Brahms, starring Katie Holmes. It's going to make like $8. Emma, in this satire of social class and the pain of growing up, Anya Taylor-Joy's Emma must adventure through misguided matches and romantic missteps to find the love that has been there all along. It's based on the Jane Austen novel.
And following that up, we have on VOD, The Night Clerk. A voyeuristic hotel clerk becomes the subject of a murder investigation. This is written and directed by Michael Christopher. Stars Ana de Armas, which means I'm going to definitely watch it. Helen Hunt, John Leguizamo, and Ty Sheridan. Mm.
Then on VOD, we also have Goldie. Holding on to your dreams isn't easy when fate keeps throwing obstacles in your path. And for Goldie, a teen living in a family shelter, her mother's arrest is that obstacle. She has to take care of her younger sisters and prevent the system from splitting them up as she hopes to launch her career by starring in a music video. It stars Slick Woods and directed by Sam DeJong, and it releases Feb 21.
All right. Well, also coming out on February 21st is what I thought was going to be a teen comedy, but it's not. It's called Premature. It's a video on demand set against the backdrop of a changing Harlem landscape when 17-year-old Ayana meets handsome and mysterious outsider Isaiah. Her entire world is turned upside down on her path towards self-discovery as she travails the rigorous terrain of young love the summer before she leaves for college. Stars nobody you know. Out of all those, what is your pick of the week, guys? Troy, you're our guest. What is the movie you're going to see?
Well, I saw that Goldie was getting 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, so since nothing else seems interesting, and Harrison Ford probably shouldn't be in anything right now, I would say Goldie probably seems the most interesting, to be quite honest. Not just because it was mine.
John?
The Night Clerk is someone I'm going to definitely go watch, only because Ana de Armas is in it, and she needs to be in more things.
Agreed. I'm going to go with Goldie, too, because the reviews are saying great things. And I'm sorry, Colt. Boy 2, nobody needs. Emma, okay, fine. Call the Wild, man. I want to love that movie, But that dog is creepy because it's not a real dog. Why wouldn't you use a real dog?
And now you know where the topic is, what it is, what it is.
Right? That and Sonic, between those two, is like, get it right. Why is it so hard to do, man? Don't use CGI when you don't not need to. Our From the Outside In topic this week, we're talking about CGI characters. And to get us there, Troy, he loves a little history. Right? He loves a history lesson, and he's very good at it. So take us down the CGI path a little bit.
Well, CGI owes its entire history to one and only one movie franchise. And no, it is not Toy Story. It is Westworld. Mm-hmm. Yes, in 1973, Yul Brynner's Men in Black had Android RoboVision, which was actually accomplished by color separating the frames of the film and then scanning them into individual blocks and then recolorized to get the pixelated infrared RoboVision effect. It was the first time cinema used 2D computer graphics in the industry. And then in 1976, in the follow-up film, Future World, they actually used 3D computer graphics for the first time for like a hot second, as we see Peter Fonda's head and hand rendered into three dimensions. This technology also required no glasses, except it didn't catch on, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. 3D wireframe graphics made its first appearance from Larry Cuba, who went to the University of Illinois in the Chicago area here, and he brought up the infamous Death Star Battle Trench Run plans that you see in Star Wars A New Hope for wireframes. And then we got our first full extensive 3D animation in the movie Tron in 1982, and after that, Pixar literally took over. So John Lasseter actually made the stained glass knight that we see in Young Frankenstein in 1984. It was actually a model that they scanned and digitized into computer.
Wait. Young Frankenstein, you mean Young Sherlock Holmes?
Young Sherlock Holmes, sorry, yes. I was watching Young Frankenstein the other night.
Thank God I knew that one off. I was like, whoa, yes.
Young
no.
Sherlock Holmes.
No.
All right. Young Sherlock Holmes, yes. The stained glass knight, they scanned him into the computer, and then Lasseter was able to manipulate the knight in the computer and colorize and digitize the stained glassness. And that took a very, very long time. So technically, it wasn't Pixar. It was still technically Lucasfilm at the time when that happened. And then in 85, they made the first ever animation of a giant android and his nemesis, a bumblebee, which was the last thing they technically did under the Lucas brand, but it was made on the Pixar computer. 89 then saw us play with water effects for the first time in The Abyss. In 1993, the first full-scale character with actual texture around it was created. That was Jurassic Park mm-hmm. in 1993 with the life-size dinosaurs. And then we got our first full-time, fully CGI feature film in Toy Story in 1995. In 97, we all wanted to know more about what CGI could do. So we had our first full-scale battle scene in Starship Troopers with the bugs. And then the Uncanny Valley finally hit us in 2001 with Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, the first to actually render humans with over 15 terabytes of memory. Mm. If you compare that, Tron had 0.000019 terabytes. The entire movie of Tron was that small compared to Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, which bombed, and of course then Square Pictures went out of business.
That's too bad.
And it's why it's taken forever for Final Fantasy VII Remake to come out. 2004 added motion capture to the scene, and that's when we got Forrest Gump being inserted into famous historical sites. And then we finally got facial capture in 2009 with Avatar.
Did you mention The Last Starfighter?
I didn't mention The Last Starfighter because I don't think it was anything significant that they weren't already doing in previous years. Unless you got something that I didn't pick up on in there.
Well, like the whole spaceship and the space battles and all that other stuff, I think that was pretty significant for 1984.
It was significant in what we were able to accomplish, but technically it was already done in Star Wars and Battlestar, and it was on TV already.
You said facial capture for Avatar. Wasn't it done first in Lord of the Rings for Gollum?
Well, it was a fully rendered character. So this was actually facial capture for Avatar and then putting it onto another actual character inside.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. I think. Maybe. I know you did research, so I'm just going to say, sure, sounds right. So going through all that to get us to CGI characters, what was the first CGI character you remember? And I want to point out Roger Rabbit is not a CGI character, unless the hard way. It's animation. So what was the first CGI character you actually remember where you, wow, that's kind of cool.
For me, it was The Abyss. the water pseudopod that comes to life, and then the water arm just kind of moves through the sub and starts following people and looking at people, and you're just like, damn, how did they do that? Mm-hmm. you were just mesmerized the entire time. And so to see that come to life and be able to move around on screen is just breathtaking and just wow. You know, even though the movie was super long.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that movie. Is there's nothing being long or not.
Nothing wrong with the movie. It's just super long.
It is long.
Which is why that same moment is what floored me as well.
Oh, really? Both of you? Huh. Mine was the stained glass night. That's how I knew that that was wrong. Because I remember going to a theater and seeing young Sherlock Holmes, because I love Sherlock Holmes, and it was the first real integration of CGI at that point, or at least publicly. And you went to see it, and it's just like, it's a whole hallucination moment that really doesn't make any sense in the context of Sherlock Holmes. But because it was an Amblin Entertainment project, and they were trying to kind of mesh the old world with the new world, they brought CGI into it, and it just made a huge dynamic when you're sitting there in the theater, and I'm already engrossed in the story. I love the story in that film. I think it's a beautiful story. It's well told. It's smart. It's very Arthur Conan Doyle. And then you incorporate that element, which is just random. It just comes out of nowhere, really. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. It's not sensible that it's even part of this film, but it's wonderful. And it gives you an idea in 1985 or four, whatever you said.
Five was the movie. Four is when they made it. Yeah.
Okay. There you go. It gave you a something to reflect on. And when I walked out of the theater, all I kept thinking about, I'll never forget it. I never stopped thinking about, wow, they can almost do anything. Like, they're this close to being able to do anything. Star Wars made almost everything seem possible, but that showed me something very, very small. And it really was like a little character. And it showed me that, man, we're close. We can almost do some of the coolest stuff. And we eventually were able to do it. So that was the first thing that stood out. What was the first time you remember being in awe of a CGI character? What impressed you about it?
The time that struck me the most would have to be Jurassic Park.
Hmm.
That movie convinced everyone that dinosaurs were real and dinosaurs were a thing, and people were upset that dinosaurs were dying in a movie, and it was pretty incredible. And I just remember seeing that. I was in high school and those dinosaurs were on screen, and I'm like, that is amazing, and I can't wait to see where we go from here. But really, that was the first time I go, that's going to be the thing.
Do you remember the first time when you got in the theater, and all three of us definitely remember seeing this in the theater, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you get there and the whole thing is building, they don't really show you much of any dinosaur, probably the first 45 minutes of the movie, if not hour. And then they open it wide when they finally get to the park. Maybe it's a half hour. They get to the park and you see that huge wide shot of Brontosaurus and every other dinosaur that's there. And you just realize that everything you thought about when you were a kid finally happened.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that magic that just coursed through your veins when that happened is just something I don't think I've... Maybe Avengers Assemble is the thing that's come closest to it. But that moment was just magic to me. Just seeing that wide open shot and just seeing how beautiful that park was and all these creatures that now somehow look real, and they're not real, but they look real, was just amazing.
Yeah, before that, you would have, essentially, it would be either a Ray Harryhausen-esque sculpture that they would be using, or right. Or you know, some animatronic that they'd be able to use, and you'd only see maybe one or two of the animatronics, and everything else would be a hint. This is where they weren't afraid to show you every little bump and scrape on these things, and it was incredible.
And there wasn't many.
No, it was like Land of the Lost before. I mean, if he's a Firefly, those were the monsters we grew up with. Like those little figures. That's about how real they looked when Wash is playing with his little dinosaurs. That's about how real everything looked when we were kids. So to actually see these things happen and not be stop motion animation or something like that, and actually look like a real animal that we've had in our imaginations most of our lives, was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. What about you, Trey? Was that the first time it awed you, or is there a time before that?
I mean, the Abyss was pretty awe-inspiring, but yeah, I can just remember, you know, the music, and he's like, welcome to Jurassic Park, and it's like, holy crap, is that for real? Is that on the screen? And you're like, you almost yelled up at the guy. I was like, could you rewind, back that up a little bit? I want to see that again. Yeah, Jurassic Park was just like that. Like, your eyes opened, and there was like this whole new world in front of you. I don't think I've had a moment like that in film, I don't think, since then, until I actually participated in the Rise of the Resistance ride at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge just last week. That was the next time I was just like, I'm living Star Wars. Holy crap. This is amazing. So, and that took, what, 20, 25 years in between there.
Would you guys say that the T-1000 was, because that was before Jurassic Park, were you in awe with that, or would you just say that was really cool what they did with that?
I'm in the camp of that was very cool. I wouldn't say if I was in awe over it, but I it was something that was very cool. I feel like, I think that came before, or came after The Abyss, so a lot of the T-1000 we saw in The Abyss.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And I think you kind of looked at the T-1000 too at the time because you didn't know, like, is it computers? Is it not computers? How are they doing it? Like, I almost thought it was more like stop frame, substitute with claymation, bring back frame kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't seem like it was fully computer realized to me, because just the way that it molded and melted, it seemed like it was more claymation looking like, I guess, when you saw it the first time, until you obviously read up on it and then realized it was computers. But at the time, I don't think it was like as like, holy crap, they made a freaking brontosaurus the size of a brontosaurus and not the size of my hand.
And I want to kind of jump ahead, and I'm just going to just bounce around a little bit, because I want to actually have a real discussion, not just like name off your favorite stuff. When I think it was 2000, yeah, it was 2001. You had Lord of the Rings, and you also had episode one, right? Phantom Menace.
Yep.
So, or no, that was 99. Well, in this like 5-year span. So you have Gollum and you have Jar Jar Binks. And I want to know what you guys think of those two characters, because I know one was reviled and one was revered. But what did you think? Because those were really the two big CGI characters that actually spoke. They were their own characters. How did you guys feel about those two particular characters? And just in terms of the CGI itself, not necessarily the Misa and all that other jive, just in terms of the actual characters on the screen.
So not the acting or the dialogue.
Right. I'm just talking
about just a rendering of the characters.
Just in terms of visual representation. Yeah.
So I just recently took a moment to watch a little bit of the Lord of the Rings movies and a couple of Star Wars movies. I just had them on the background and stuff. And I purposely sat down and paid attention to Jar Jar Binks and the animation there. And only because when I was watching Lord of the Rings and I saw what Gollum looked like, I was actually kind of surprised by the level of animation behind Gollum. I don't think Gollum's going to age well, whereas Jar Jar is still going to age fine. And a lot of the creatures in those in that era of Star Wars are going to age fine as far as computer animation are concerned. But soon we'll start seeing in Gollum the glaring issues that are there, to where he doesn't feel grounded. He doesn't feel like the light's bouncing off of him the right way. There's a lot of things in his structure that doesn't stay consistent. And whereas Jar Jar is a solid form and he's there in space.
I can see that. I'll counter though and say, for me, like, Jar Jar seemed like any other CG character that we've probably seen to date at that point in 99. And we'd already seen Toy Story, so we knew like there could be better, right? And it's not that Jar Jar wasn't badly rendered. I just think when you think about reading something in a book like The Lord of the Rings and you just envision what Gollum could be, and the fact that they were able to capture in this visual what you literally had in your brain growing up reading these books, and you could see it on the screen for the first time, I think bringing something to life that you had only just words to describe, I thought they did a really great job with Gollum, and not just because of the performance from Andy Serkis, but I think just designing a character from scratch with just text and being able to bring that to life was just a much bigger feat than creating something out of nothing, because I can create any kind of cartoon character and then render them in a computer, which I think is what Jar Jar was.
Yeah, see, I really sat down and thought about this because it was a really interesting conundrum to me, because you have these two characters, and I removed the performances, because to me, the performances make those characters better and worse than they are. If mm-hmm. if you go and put on, and I did this before we did the show, if you put on episode one, Phantom Menace, and you mute it, right? So you're not Misa, all that nonsense that just makes people want to pull their eyes off. And then you go watch Gollum, same thing, mute it, and just watch it without the performance and how great the acting is there. I think you'll notice a big difference. And that's where I'm going to kind of lean a little bit to John, a little bit to both of you. I do see that Gollum is not going to age well, because a lot of that, and it actually took me by surprise when I'm paying attention to just the computer animation, a lot of that works because of Andy Serkis. A lot of that works because of the voice and the performance and everything else. Like the computer imagery, there are definitely moments where I'm like, I can see where that's going to be a problem in 5 years, you know, in our brains, you know, because it'll still be great with us fans, because we'll be like, I don't care. But if you really stop and look at it, you're going to see some differences. Jar Jar feels very much more a part of the world just by going by the effects, because the entire world of episode one and the movies that he's in, I think he just disappeared in the other movies, was computer rendered. So it blends in a little bit more because it's not against naturalistic settings. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And I really feel like that's where kind of John's point is, that you're going to notice it more because it's all of his performances against naturalistic settings. A lot of Jar Jar's is at the backdrop of other computer animation, which makes it blend a little bit easier. It was just like an interesting dynamic. I think everybody should kind of do that. Just go take your favorite CGI character, mute it, take the performance out of it, and just look at the effects and kind of see if you feel like it's as strong a performance or as strong as a representation as you thought when you take the humanity out of it. And that goes because Jar Jar, the character, is awful. As soon as you hear that voice, man, as soon as I hit mute and then I turned mute off, I immediately hated the character again. Like it was a weird emotional surge where I'm like, oh, that's kind of, man, that's really there's a lot of brilliance back there. There's a lot of texture and a lot of cool ideas. Then you hear the voice like, ah, Jesus, what? No. You know, it's just shock therapy. Whereas Gollum, you know, it's kind of like, all right, I mean, it's okay. It's fine. But as soon as you hear Andy Serkis's voice and his representation, what he did with that character, it's magic again. Like the magic comes back in my muscle memory, I guess.
Which just goes to prove the point that there needs to be some kind of Oscar for this, or these characters that play CGI characters need to be brought into the, you know, the leading actor or leading actress categories. Because, you know, for Serkis not to even have an award for this work that he's done, especially with Gollum and Caesar specifically, is just a crying shame. Because it's without his performance in the mocap suit, those characters are not what they are otherwise.
100% agree with that. How he never got a nomination of any kind for acting boggles my mind. That's just short-sightedness on their part, really. All right, how about those that didn't work for you? Now that you're really thinking about CGI and you're pondering it. You know, you talked about the Scorpion King earlier, Troy. Is that
one
of your worst ones? Why did you hate that one so much? I mean, we all know.
Because it didn't look like him at all.
Oh my God, it looked like a balloon that had liquid in it just kind of rolling around.
Somebody took a magic marker and painted the Rock's face on it.
Pretty much.
I mean, it's like, where are we right now? Like, why couldn't we just make him like a centaur or something and film the top half and put green pants on him, and then just green pants against a green screen and you could digitize the rest of it in? I mean, that was just such a bad move. There must have been a production timing, or maybe his schedule didn't work out, or I don't know.
What made it worse was they did the eyebrow routine with him, and it was just like, ah!
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jabba comes to mind in A New Hope in the special editions. Like, that's just bad. All around bad.
And hang on, I'll come back to Jabba. You're talking about The Mummy Returns with The Rock, Scorpion King.
Yeah.
You know I love that movie until the last 10 minutes?
Like, yep.
I think it's a perfect sequel until the last 10 minutes, and it just... That whole CGI ruined everything.
100%.
Sorry, Jabba the Hutt, come back.
Oh, yeah, no, just Jabba's just awful. I know I love the story, but the Langoliers.
Oh, man, on TV?
On TV.
Yeah, that was bad.
That CGI, especially at the end when they're like eating up the past and the little brown. I was like, what in the hell are we watching right now? Like, give me back my Brunson Pinchot, man. That was good stuff.
But to be fair, that was like the late 80s and...
And it was TV and it wasn't movie scale, but I think the biggest abomination was those crystal skull monkeys. Never want to see swinging of monkeys ever again.
Good point.
Like I'll watch Jar Jar any day over those freaking monkeys.
I'll even add to your Jabba the Hutt. I agree, Jabba the Hutt was awful, and That was that. That was the. They added that later, right? That was after the
special edition of New Hope. Yeah.
Yeah. Princess Leia in Rogue One. Awful. I hated that glowing Paul Walker-y vibe that Princess Leia had in that Rogue One. Ugh. Ugh. I couldn't stand that.
I don't know. I actually, that one I didn't bother me nearly as much.
You're drunk. There's.
That was, I might be.
So it's like weird. It's like on screen for 1 second. And if you watched it in 2D instead of 3D or IMAX, it was fine.
Destroys
in 2D, it's fine.
Destroys the movie for me. Destroys it. It takes me.
I mean, destroys a little hard to. You know.
Takes me and puts me out of that movie. Yeah, it happened. What about you?
That sounds like a bit much.
Well, to each their own. What about you, Jen?
The one that comes to mind the most is the Ang Lee Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's so terrible. He looks like the. Like the green rubber pants that look like they're basically painted on, and everything about that is just terrible.
Do you guys like Smart Hulk? Do you like that look?
I do like Smart Hulk. I hope it doesn't last,
like
but
Endgame,
I like it.
Endgame Hulk?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the transformation between the two personally. So like staying there the whole time takes away from the whole concept, but the design of him and the look of him looks great.
It's a little creepy in a way because it's like, it's not quite Ruffalo. It's not quite the Hulk. It's like, pick a side. I don't know what we're doing. Yeah.
It's Ruffalo.
I think it works well. I want to see more angry Hulk and more mindless Hulk again, but I'll take Smart Hulk too. The way they played him was for laughs was awesome.
How do you guys feel about Dobby in the Harry Potter series?
A little too polished.
Sometimes he works and sometimes he doesn't. When we first meet Dobby, he doesn't work.
Do you feel?
And then by the seventh movie, he starts working.
Do you feel like it's lighting or just the technology wasn't there? They had to catch up to it.
I feel like the team doing the lighting wasn't up to par, really, because there's so many options or so many things. Not just Dobby in the first, like in the first movie, you have when they have the ogre. That ogre looked kind of terrible and Gumby-ish and weird, and there was a couple other things that kind of have the same sort of feeling. So I think the production team they're using to do the 3D animation just wasn't to scale to what was available at the time.
Okay, and before any other ones that didn't work for you, before we move on? Okay. I want to ask you guys about the Sonic the Hedgehog situation before we move on to like what your personal favorites are, okay?
I'm ready.
So... for those that weren't aware, the trailer dropped for Sonic the Hedgehog, and the internet screamed about how he looked. He didn't look like Sonic the Hedgehog. He just looked like some creepy-ass little pedo hedgehog. I don't know what the hell that thing was, but it looks freaky. And nobody wanted their child anywhere near that. So the internet screamed. They went back to the drawing board. They redid it and actually revamped Sonic the Hedgehog so it looks more like the Sonic we know and love, and now we've got that back. So two questions. One, how do you feel about the internet creating this? Because you know it sets a precedent that I'm sure a lot of us don't love. And also, you can see some positives from. So how do you feel about that? And two, what do you think of the actual redesign now that you have it? Troy?
First part, I would say, I think it's great that the fans were able to get their say into a digital character, especially the fact that in the past, we probably wouldn't have had time to even go back and do that. Because it takes so long to render these things in post-production. So to be able to go back in and switch it out as fast as they did, I think is a testament to the technology today. And the fact that they could have that response time, I think that's fantastic. And it showcases the technology in movies. So that was a positive note. On the part two part, I just don't think we need a Sonic the Hedgehog movie. So I don't care either way, to be quite honest.
Fair enough.
Is my son going to go see it? Absolutely. I don't know why he's going to see it because he hasn't ever played a Sonic game, but he's going to go see it with his buddy and that's fine. But yeah, it's a hedgehog. I don't care what it looks like. It spins in a ball 90% of the time anyway, so you don't see its mouth. It's always rolling around in just a blue blob.
And collects coins. Hello.
Yeah.
It teaches kids about saving money. I think you should appreciate the importance of that.
He collects rings, not coins.
They're whatever. He collects things that are glittery and shiny, and he saves them. It's teaching kids about the need for a savings account, for a 401k.
You know, who else does that? Serial killers.
Which then stab you with a spike, and then you lose all your rings.
Right.
But then you go back and you get more.
Right. I'm of two worlds when it comes to this. On one part, I'm really just tired of hearing about the internet complaining about stuff.
Exactly.
And I really hate the fact that the internet got their way. At the same time, I like the fact that the internet got their way because it at least Sonic looks like Sonic, and it costs the production company so much money to redo all that, and maybe it's their own fault for choosing the wrong design for Sonic as opposed to one that looks more like the game version. But I don't know, there's a lot of money being spent. There's probably some poor art director who got fired over this whole thing, even though he may or may not deserve it. There's a lot going on there. So I don't know how to feel, but as far as whether or not I'd go see it, yeah, I'd go see the movie. So I like Sonic.
Sometimes, though, it's a good idea, though, to make that change based on the feedback. I mean, think about it. It's literally like a test audience that gave their feedback, and then they got something better out of it, and it'll probably make their money back for having that extra investment versus dealing with what we're dealing with Birds of Prey, and then they have to like change the name of the movie because the marketing is so bad that nobody went out and saw it.
That's true.
Sometimes the internet sometimes the internet's a good thing, John.
Or just cats.
Well, the thing about the name of Birds of Prey, it's still Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous, whatever ridiculous title it is. That's still the title of it. When it comes to the way, if you're going to search for the movie, you search for Harley Quinn. And so that's why on the placards they're putting Harley Quinn. That's why on a lot of other stuff they're putting Harley Quinn, is because everyone who's looking for the movie would just be looking for Harley Quinn. And saying it's Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous stupid title of Harley Quinn makes you think that you're going to be dealing with more people than just Harley Quinn most of the time, which it really you're not. You're dealing with her almost the entire movie.
And it could have just been Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
Right. It could have been. It would have been a better title.
Should have been.
But they're trying to be cutesy about it because Harley Quinn's a psychotic.
And now, I mean, it's a couple of weeks. The movie's probably fading away at this point. So, but the new title, you know, will hold for a while. I will say, like, I really hated the fact that the internet created that situation and they were able to do that, because it's not that I don't agree with it. I 100% agree with it. It's just, man, the press, I'm just worried that every time you give... We speak about the internet like it's actually a collective, but it feels like it's a collective. Every time you give them a little bit where you, hey, we got our way, we made some change, they want to do it for everything. And I don't want to hear outrage for everything. We already feel like we do that. Every time 2,500 people out of millions doesn't like something, they get on Twitter and they just harp and harp and harp and harp and harp. And they write tons of articles on it because they're desperate for clicks. So they'll do anything where there's outrage so they can get those clicks. And it'll seem like it's a big deal, and it's not. 90% of the time, it's not a big situation. It's not a big deal. Nobody really cares about it, except for a very, very small contingent. This one, I just feel like they must have done a lot of research and realized, no, this is like hundreds of thousands of people actually believe this looks terrible, because it does look terrible. I don't even know how they even got it to trailer form without somebody, you know, like some exec going, this looks bad, Steve. I wouldn't want my kid near that freaking thing. So maybe we should change it. No. Kids are going to love it. And then they put it out there and they go, oh God, I'm wrong. So the art director, John, should have been fired because it's awful.
Right.
The new version looks great. So I'm on board with the new version of Sonic. I wish they would have realized it on their own instead of the internet getting that kind of win, because I'm afraid it's going to create a lot more issues. Like, you know, we were worried for a while that DC movies were going to go just become Marvel because of the internet. You know, I don't want that. I don't want stories being decided by a bunch of people on the internet. I want stories being decided by storytellers. That's what I want. This one is a little okay because you're taking a bad design, you're making it better. But when it's going to get to the point where they start affecting how stories are told, and that's where I'm going to have an issue with it.
Yeah, but when you're so far down the process, we've had this for years. It's called test screens. You have test screen groups and marketing groups. Marketing groups have existed forever. It's just that we have the technology today that the marketing group happens to be 25 million people. You know, and I'd rather have 25 million people's opinion of something that's bad ahead of time than spending billions of dollars in losses because no one came and saw my thing.
Well, how do you get to the point where you understand this is the reality, like it's really a bad thing, versus this is just a lot of people, because people are mad about everything every week. They're being negative and picking things apart every week, something else. They can't always be right. So how do you know when that's the right move to change it because they really have a real good reason for it, versus no, it's just the internet being the internet?
It's a tough call. It's a tough argument. You know, it's like those people who get on the internet who swear by Marvel, but they will poo-poo anything DC just for the sake of doing it. And it's one of the reasons why I hate the fact that this worked for Sonic, because again, it's all the wrong people getting in this case, all the right people got their voice heard, and that's great. But in a lot of other cases, a lot of the wrong people do get their voice heard, and then people act on it, and the rest of us are going, well, what are you doing? I don't understand.
I think it depends on where the source material is coming from, too, because there's definitely groups of people, and not to be not inclusive, right? But there are groups of people that are the true keyboard warriors that just do this no matter what. And then there's hundreds of thousands of people going like, I played Sonic when I was in grade school, and this looks like crap. Those are the people that you believe, right? Because they're the ones that are like, yeah, this doesn't look like anything that I've seen before. And it's not in those circles where you would get the normal complainers coming from. It's a volume play.
Yeah, absolutely. Great conversation, though. I find that stuff interesting. All right, so what are your personal favorites at this point? Like, at this moment, what are your favorite CGI characters?
Down the list, right? Gollum, Caesar, Andy Serkis can do no wrong. Snoke is just weird, but still played it awesomely.
I will say I didn't like Snoke as a character. I didn't think the animation was very good.
The problem with Snoke as a character was in it like for 2 seconds. Like, he should have been in the freaking last movie too, but we won't go there.
Well, he was in a vat. He was in a vat floating around with a couple of him.
Exactly.
because he's a paper doll of a character, which he was stupid.
I mean, we mentioned T-1000, obviously. Master Control in Tron is a CGI character. I thought that was really great for the time period. The one that I really, really thought was great was Ava in Ex Machina. The way they did the human and robotic blending.
Oh, okay.
Together. That was just freaking phenomenal. And then the only good thing about the Hobbit trilogy was Smaug.
Oh, yeah.
Would you say that Smaug was a better looking dragon than the dragons in Game of Thrones? Or?
Oh, hell no.
Really?
No. Smaug was good for what Smaug was supposed to represent, because it is more high fantasy fictional. I mean, Game of Thrones felt like, even though it's high fantasy in genre, Game of Thrones felt like this could have really happened in the 1000, 1500s, Middle Ages, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think it was more of a dragon dinosaur crossover that you think you would typically have seen in real life, where Smaug was more true high fantasy, where you can make the dragon look like anything you want the dragon to look like. So they both serve their purposes fairly well.
I don't know if he actually answered your question.
I think he took the middle ground is what I got. Well, he said no at first, so I'm going to count that as a no. You gotta know, Troy. John, his answers are very Amanda-esque.
I'm denoted as a 9 on the Enneagram. That means I don't like conflict, so I can't pick a side.
What about you,
okay,
John? What about you? What are your favorites?
You know, I don't like conflict either. I don't do really good at picking sides. However, the T-1000 is one that I picked. It was just a great, great, for the time, something that really sparked a lot of imagination. 2017's Kong on Kong Skull Island.
You like him better than Peter Jackson's King Kong?
Oh my God, yes.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
He, like, the way he looked, I mean, Peter Jackson's King Kong looked like a giant gorilla, and that's fine. Whereas Kong, he looked like something that would be gorilla-esque, but more of its own sort of creature.
It had personality. He had spunk.
Yes.
Fire.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, he was just amazing. And you know, on the same note, you have Godzilla, which is the same production company. Godzilla, for what they did as far as how they created him for the first movie, and then how they corrected him tiny bits for the second movie, good moves all around on that whole bit. Because in the first movie, they gave him those big, like, almost brontosaurus, almost elephantine, clunky tree trunk feet.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the second one, he had an actual foot, and he had toes and all that other stuff working for him. Not that I was staring at his toes. It's not like I have a Godzilla foot fetish going on. Rawr. But, you know, it happens. I have Ava on my list as well for all the reasons that Troy mentioned. And finally, Hulk, when we see him in Avengers, after so many bad Hulks from the first two movies, and then to see when Bruce Banner turns into Hulk in Avengers, the first one, that Hulk was awesome.
I love that you guys both said Ava. That never even occurred to me, and it should have. That never even occurred to me. It should have.
It's like your favorite movie. How did it not occur to you?
It's definitely a favorite. I wouldn't say the favorite. It's definitely a favorite. But yeah, I didn't even think of it. Because I just, her performance is mostly real. So, you know, I just didn't see it that way.
So was Caesar's.
True.
Just not human.
No, that's fair.
Oh, I can't forget about Mufasa. Mufasa was good too.
The entire Lion King cats, like they all look like real animals. So I mean,
young Simba looked a little fake.
I didn't see any moment in those animals where I'm not like, I want to take one home and pet them. I just love
it. I mean, Mufasa looked like a freaking actual lion that you saw at the zoo.
Yeah, he did. I will say, you know, we've talked about Gollum and we've talked about Caesar. And by the way, Caesar's performance, once again, Andy Serkis is the king. He is the king of motion capture.
All three of those movies are great.
But I think I've said this in the show before. The only time I've ever 100% bought into a living talking character, I'm not talking about Jurassic Park, a living talking character was Rocket and Groot.
Yeah.
That was the first time I can remember sitting in a movie and being so immersed in what the characters were doing and being that even though it's a freaking tree and a talking rabid raccoon, I never for a second stopped and went, that's CGI until the very end. I'm like, I just bought into that hook, line, and sinker from the get-go. Gollum, there's constant moments where I'm like, oh, it's CGI. Oh, it's CGI. Oh, it's CGI.
Mm-hmm.
Never happened with Rocket and Groot. And I can't explain why. It's just that well done, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Rocket, that's a freak of nature as far as animation is concerned, just because if you think about how much you have all those little bits of hair, then you have to animate whatever's affecting the hair, everything about it. Like the animation team really did a good job. It really makes me wish that I had the good grades when I was choosing my art schools to actually get into a computer animation program. Because the art school I went to, I actually applied for the computer animation program. I didn't get good enough grades because they only wanted people with 4.0 averages in that department.
Well, I guess Disney hired all those guys.
I've read the animators. Yes, they did.
And I'm trying to remember, was Rocket after or before Jungle Book?
That's probably similar.
I think it before.
It might have been before, but it's definitely close. It's got to be close.
Yeah, because I remember the Jungle Book and when they're floating down the river and I'm like, they did hair and water and they did wet hair.
Yeah, they did.
That's amazing.
Hair. Yeah, that was pretty amazing. Agreed. I love Durotan in the Warcraft movie. I don't know if you guys ever watched that or not. But
didn't watch the movie, but I heard good things about his character and the performance.
Yeah, I saw it too. And the animation for the orcs, with the exception of, oh God, what's her name? The actress that played one of the half-orc. With the exception of her, which I believe was unfair to do to her, the orcs looked awesome. They looked like what Warcraft orcs should look like.
Yeah, it was really took me out because I don't really care about Dungeons and Dragons or any of that jive, but they really impressed the hell out of me. That whole, how they brought that world to life, or Warcraft the game, how they brought that to life, I thought was pretty fantastic. I love Davy Jones from Pirates of the Caribbean. I just thought that was a really cool design and a neat way to do a character.
You know what I loved about Davy Jones and the whole and his whole crew is every single one of them was different. They didn't go the easy route and have Davy Jones look like one thing and everything else was a couple of blueberries. Every single one of those villains was something different. One's a crustacean, one looks like seaweed, the other one has crap hanging off of them, one's a skeleton. Every single one was different, and I thought that was amazing.
So you'd put in movie jail then the 1,000 copy of Orcs? Like, make everybody different if you're going to do it that way, instead of copying a whole group of people?
Oh, God. Right. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I also want to give a shout-out to Velociraptors and T-Rexes and all that other jive, because it still amazes me that stuff came to life. I just find that fantastic. And I kind of also, I have a soft spot for Scooby-Doo in the Scooby-Doo movie.
No.
Yep, I do.
No.
I do. I know everybody says, man, you could talk to 100 people. 99 of them are going to say that looks awful. I love Scooby-Doo, so I'm just like, I like it.
Okay, take your TV, put it on mute.
I can't. And then watch,
and then watch Roger Rabbit and Scooby-Doo and go, why didn't you just do Scooby-Doo like Roger Rabbit, and it would have worked so much better.
Just don't ruin this for me, Troy. Let me have this thing. Okay? Let me have this thing. All right, so
terrible.
Here are the listeners for the top 10 CGI characters. Man, Dobby's number 10. I don't even understand that. I think Dobby most of the time looks bad, but okay. Number 9, Godzilla. Which one? Number 8, the Hulk. Which one? Number 7, the T-1000. Okay. Number 6, here's one I'm really surprised. We kind of mentioned really quick when Troy was doing his history lesson with the Na'vi from Avatar.
The fact that he said Avatar is the thing that I'm stuck on right now. I was like, did you say Avatar?
Avatar, whatever. What do you guys think about the CGI characters from that film?
You know, when I turn the sound off, it looks great. It looks awesome. When I don't pay attention to the story, looks great. Looks awesome. As soon as the story is on, I don't I'm over it.
Ditto. I think the challenge with that movie is like, and this happens too if you actually watch episode 3 of the Star Wars trilogy, right? The Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
Those films were shot with particular technology to be seen in a particular way. And when you saw Avatar in IMAX, the way Cameron intended you to watch it, those characters were great. The minute you bring it onto a 54-inch 2D screen at home, it all falls apart. And I think that's the same way. Like when you watch episode 3, like the CGI works in time, but then if you try to watch episode 3 now on your 4K high definition Blu-ray, the lightsaber battle in the lava scene, where it looked like they were floating through lava, you know, early 2000s, right now it looks like they stand still and the lava moves past them.
Yeah, that's
just
true.
Totally takes you out of the moment. So,
that is true. I remember that when we watched it before the holidays. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. It's like, oh my gosh, is that so bad now? Because it's glaringly an issue because the technology's caught up and it stands out.
And what's also funny is Rogue One, Princess Leia terrified me both on the big screen and on 4K. So neither one of those really worked for me ever. No, the top five CGI characters from our Facebook group where we did a poll. Detective Pikachu's number 5. Kind of surprised. It looks pretty good.
I haven't seen the movie, but he does look good.
He actually
looks great. There's a lot of characters in that movie that look great.
The Bulbasaur, I thought looked really good too.
Yeah.
Number 4, Caesar. Number 3, Gollum.
That's a crime.
Number 2, what? That Caesar's number 4?
Yes.
Because it should be what?
1.
Okay, well, hang on. 4 is Caesar, 3 is Gollum, 2 is Groot, 1 is Rocket, Raccoon. Why do you think Caesar should be number 1?
Because I think part of CGI works because of the capture and the actor and the character and the emotion it involves. Like, Rocket's good and fun, but he's also the most current, right? He's using the latest technology. So, of course, he's going to look the best. But when you go back and you watch Caesar, especially in that first movie, it's like, oh my, not the really first movie with the Wahlberg or whatever his name was, Marky Mark.
Well, Caesar wasn't really part of that, so don't worry about that.
It was in the movie, but it wasn't circus.
It was the circus, right? It was the circus.
Right. But I mean, you watch Circus's first.
Unrelated.
You watch Circus's first one. It's just like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, I'm rooting for the monkeys.
I still am, really. I mean. Yeah.
I would put Caesar over Gollum. And that's
more
that's
so like, now than ever, I'm rooting for the monkeys.
Just not the swinging kind.
That's an interesting... No, not those. They were awful. That's an interesting dynamic. Do you root for Gollum or Caesar? Which one do you think is the best? I would probably go with Caesar on that, too.
Yeah, I would go with Caesar on that. Caesar is a much more solid-looking animation than Gollum is.
Again, I mean, go back and watch and just put mute on and just watch the effects between those two. I think you really notice the difference that like, a performance makes when you do that. I hope everybody does check that out. And it works for Rocket Raccoon, too, except the effects don't look much different. But, man, Bradley Cooper does such a great job with that performance. And he doesn't, I don't think, ever gets enough credit because people just feel like that's not an actor. That's an actual talking raccoon. Just me? Okay.
Well, right. the thing with Bradley Cooper that's still just, I mean, he was a TV actor. And then you just look at how he like invented his whole career. I mean, that's just like.
No, Troy, he was always a movie actor. They just had to give him the parts. That's what it was.
That's true.
The breakout role he had in Wedding Crashers, you know, really did a number for him.
Shut up. I remember watching Alias, and every time he would come on Alias, I'm like, that guy's great. And he had like a really nothing part. But every time he came, I'm like, that guy's great. And then years later, he did Wedding Crashers. I thought he was really cool in that. And then when he did The Hangover, I'm like, that dude's a movie star. That dude is a movie star. And he is.
Yeah, Will was a fantastic character in Alias.
It was. Well, I mean, he made it that way, though. I don't think on paper it was a great character.
Yeah.
And we're going to close our show. And any recommendations you guys want to mention, Troy?
I've been kind of catching up on the streaming stuff. So I would say if you haven't started Picard, definitely start Picard. It was great. I know the first three episodes were handed out as screeners for the media. So by the time you're listening to this episode, episode four should have dropped. And therefore, that's the first one that nobody else has seen. So if you've been watching it, kudos to you. If you haven't been watching it, get on the train, because, man, it's like, it's not quite TNG feels, but, man, they're doing some really cool stuff with Borg and Romulan, and it's just really cool if you're in that universe fan. And then I was catching up on my Mr. Robot, so I finally finished season four, and I can tell you, if you haven't watched Mr. Robot, now that it's all said and done, all four seasons, totally worth the watch. Some of the probably the best television in this era.
Now, I watched the first season and then the big reveal at the end of the first season. I watched some of season two and I never really came back to it. Is it worth it to go back to it?
Absolutely. 100%. Because when you find out in season four, some of the history of Elliot and Mr. Robot. Oh, yeah. It was like Waterworks City.
Okay.
It's good.
I need to do that. That's a hard show. Let me tell you.
It's a hard show to watch.
You cannot play with your phone and watch it. You cannot. You cannot. John, anything from you?
Hopefully by the time you guys listen to this, I've actually finished watching the first season of Altered Carbon, because the trailer for the second season dropped with Anthony Mackie, and it looks awesome.
When does it start?
Now is not the good time to ask me that question.
Because I'm rewatching season one on my 4K TV, and it's amazing in 4K.
Oh my God, isn't it? I remember both times I watched the first episode. The first time I watched it, Scott was here, and we were watching it. I was just floored by how amazing that first episode looked. And then I never went back to it. And then I tried to watch it one more time, and something was going on at the time, and I never went back to it again. So now I'm going to give it my third and final shot. Because I really want to see season two with Anthony Mackie, but if I can't get through season one, I don't see the point of it.
Trust me, once you get moving, you'll get through season one quickly. It's getting through that like first or second episode where you just got to get the who is everybody and how is it all clinked together.
But doesn't it? Right. Isn't each season self-contained or no?
Well, Kovach is the star, right? The guy Kovach, but because you get to put your consciousness into a disc and then insert your disc into any human body you want called a sleeve. It's going to be more like an anthology series in a way, because you can have new actors playing the Kovach character. Right. But the trick is that what are the mannerisms that were brought to the table in the first season for Kovach? And does the next actor that takes on Kovach have to keep some of those mannerisms, or do they adopt the mannerisms of the sleeve they inhabit? So that'll be an interesting thing to see in season two.
Right.
Excellent. Well, February 27th is when that drops, John.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay, guys, well, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. And our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Rate and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at rjohndraws, Troy on The Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld, and on Twitter at Troy Heinrichs, me on Smirk and Presenting Hitchcock, and on Twitter at Aaron Smirks. And this is my whole teachable minute. You guys ready?
Ready.
Recently, I caught up with a movie called Fighting With My Family. It's a movie that looks at real-life WWE wrestler Paige, how she got into the sport, how her family revolved around wrestling for most of her life. And here's what I learned. I have mocked wrestling for years as basically just soap opera entertainment. It's just, I openly mocked it. You know, I even watched it as a kid, but I made fun of it as I got older. I'm one of those guys. But watching a movie that showed the actual behind-the-scenes efforts of how hard these guys and women work, the intense focus, the athleticism needed to sell this act in the ring, the sheer coordination it takes to pull it off. Well, now I honestly know so much more about it. I feel so much deeper about the actual art of wrestling, and I feel like I've never given it the kind of credit it deserves. So I learned that everyone involved works extremely hard to make that entertainment work. And I'm very impressed. Very impressed.
That's very cool. It is a sport, or at least it is a dance that happens. Although, I think, didn't you send me this thing where a guy jumped off of the second story of a mall?
Yeah,
where he's in land on top of four mall, other guys.
Yeah, and he jumps off the second floor because they're desperate to get people back into the mall. So they have this wrestling ring in the middle of the mall. The guy does it. That's hysterical. God. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, he lived. That's all good. All right. Thanks for joining us, Troy.
Absolutely. And if you like,
it's always fun having you, Troy.
If you do like wrestling, the Peanut Butter Falcon, saw that on the plane. I thought it was great. That's such, such a good movie.
Beautiful movie. Beautiful movie. You know, we just had a point where you can actually recommend stuff. So you could have actually brought that up.
But remember, I'm CGI Amanda. So I was getting my honorable mention in.
All right.
Right.
Well, everybody.
Well done.
What a dork. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. You dumb.